of Madison's death. I almost didn't work up the courage to come to the hospital, but I knew that if I didn't come, I'd never forgive myself. For the first time in 3 years, I'm wearing something other than a gray striped shirt and jeans. I borrowed a simple black dress from Georgia and washed my hair and pulled it back into a French braid. It's not like I think Roman cares at this point what I look like, but I care, and I'm trying to show that to him. The silver flats I also borrowed from Georgia make a pitter-patter sound on the tiles as I walk down the hallway. Once I reach Roman's room, I peek inside and see his parents gathered at the foot of his bed.
"Oh, Azelle," his mom says.
She gives me a cheery smile. I'm starting to believe that Roman's mom's warmth isn't a facade, like he says. She really has that much love inside of her. Mr. Franklin has his arm wrapped around her, and when he sees me, he draws Mrs. Franklin closer to him.
"Come in," he says.
His voice is less effusive than his wife's, but it's not cold either. Roman looks at me. He doesn't say anything. Maybe it's my imagination, but I swear that his eyes light up a little. The skin around them is still bruised, but it's less startling than it was on Friday.
"I'm hungry. Are you?"
Roman's mom says to his dad. His dad looks confused for a second, but then he gets the clue.
"Oh, yeah," he says. "Starving."
Mrs. Franklin turns to me.
"Hun, do you mind watching Roman for a few minutes while we go get a bite to eat?"
"No problem." I smile at her to let her know I appreciate her kindness, to thank her for letting me still see Roman, for putting me on the approved visitors list, and treating me like family. Mrs. Franklin kisses Roman's forehead, and once both of his parents are gone, I take a seat in the chair next to his bed.
"I should be at her grave," Roman finally says.
His voice is still strained, but it's stronger than Friday.
"Today, of all days, I should be there."
"She doesn't need you to be at her grave to know that you care." He squints at me.
"You really believe that?"
I nod. "I do, Roman. She might not physically be here, but she's still here. And she wants you to be happy. I know she does." He's silent for a few moments. The sheets are pulled up to his chin, and he's completely motionless. We stare at each other quietly until he asks,
"When I get out of here, will you go with me?"
"To her grave?" His lips twitch, and I interpret it as a yes. "I'll go anywhere with you." My face burns. I'm not used to saying things like that. But when I see him slowly smile, all my embarrassment goes away. Look at me, still being cheesy as hell. He lets out a low, gravelly laugh. "And speaking of that," I say, and reach into my bag. I pull out the book I bought about North Carolina beaches. I place it on his food tray so he can see it. "I thought maybe when you get better, we can go here." He stares at the book, and his eyes brighten. They turn from the muddy green to a dark gold. "To the ocean," I add. He doesn't say anything. He grabs the book off the tray and thumbs through it. I can tell he's trying to act disinterested, but on certain pages, he spends a bit longer staring at the glossy photos. Finally, he asks,
"Why?"
"Why what?"
"Why do you keep trying, when you know how messed up I am?"
I shrug. I stand up and walk over to the side table where his mom has placed all of his Jules Verne novels and his sketch pad. I grab the sketch pad and then sit back down in the chair. I flip the pages.
Why?
He repeats. I stare down at the charcoal drawings and then glance up, forcing myself to look him in the eye. Because loving you saved me. It's made me see myself differently, see the world differently. I owe you everything for that. Before he can respond, there's a knock on the door.
Hello?
A professional-sounding voice says. The door opens and a woman stands at the front of the room. She's not wearing a lab coat or scrubs, but instead is dressed in black pants and a white button-up.
You must be Azel,
she says, and then turns to Roman.
Hello, Roman. How are you feeling today?
Roman just stares at her. She reaches out and touches my elbow lightly.
Do you mind waiting for us in the hall?
I shake my head and walk out of the room, quietly closing the door behind me. I pace the hall as I try to imagine the conversation that's happening in the room. I picture Roman's stony, silent face and that woman doing her best to pull answers out of him. I'm about to walk the length of the hallway for a 23rd time when the door opens and the woman walks out. She brushes a stray piece of dark hair away from her forehead.
I'm Dr. Stead.
She holds out her hand. I shake it weakly.
Azel,
but you already know that. You're working with Roman? She nods.
Yes, that's right.
Good, I think, but don't say anything. I hope you're able to, you know, get through to him. She doesn't smile, but somehow manages to look friendly. I wonder if that's a skill they teach you in medical school.
I'll do the best I can. You know, I'm pretty good at what I do.
She reaches into her pocket and pulls out a small business card. She hands it to me. The paper is soft, and I run my fingers over the embossed text. If you ever want to talk or need anything, you can reach me at that number, she adds. She looks at me, her light eyes soft and kind. I wonder if she knows about Crestville Point, about our pact, if Roman said something to her. Thanks, I say weakly and turn the card over. She walks away, and the click of her heels echoes in the hall. When I walk back into Roman's hospital room, he gives me a cold look.
What?
You aren't seriously going to tell me I should talk to that lady, are you?
I clutch the card in my hand. Did you tell her about us?
What about us?
You know. He props himself up so his back can rest against the hospital bed's metal headboard. It looks like a struggle, but he makes it.
No, I haven't said a damn thing to her, and I'm not planning on it.
I sit back down in the chair by the bed. Maybe it wouldn't be such a bad thing. He sighs, and I swear I can hear the muscles in his throat ache. I imagine what the inside of his body must look like, all poisoned and bruised. I try to push that thought from my mind.
I'm not sure I even know you anymore,
he says. I bite down on my lower lip. That's not fair. I mean, you don't have to talk to her, but at least talk to me. He doesn't say anything. I stand up and walk back over to the bookshelf. This time I grab 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea. I sit back down and open the book. The silken pages are easy to flip. I start reading aloud to him. At first my voice is a bit shaky, but I soon find a rhythm. Every once in a while I glance over at him and see him looking back at me, his face relaxed, like he's listening to the story. He lets me finish the second chapter and then stops me.
Azel?
Yeah? He scoots to move his body closer to the edge of the bed. His movements are slow and labored.
Come here.
He reaches toward me, cupping my face in his hands. I lean in, and our mouths meet. His lips are chapped and swollen, but the kiss is soft and light and perfect.
I'll talk to you,
he whispers.
I promise.
As I look into his golden green eyes, I don't know if I completely believe him. I know he's still broken, impossibly sad. But as he holds my hand, I feel the potential of happiness in his pulse.
And you know what you said before about me making you see yourself differently?
He asks, his face still inches from mine. Yeah?
Well, that's why I drew you the way I did. To try and show you the person I see when I look at you, not the person you seemed to think you were.
My eyes blink like a bright camera flash just went off. Everything is white and gauzy, and I feel more exposed than I have ever been in my entire life. I know he sees me, every tiny and hidden crevice, but it doesn't scare me. My heart flutters as I realize I'm enjoying the light. I'm done with the shadows. He watches me, his eyes traveling all over my face.
I guess I want to see the world differently.
He stops, and his expression turns sad again. The room is so silent that I can hear the ceiling light buzzing.
But it still kind of sucks. You know,
he finally adds. Yeah, I know. My whole body aches for him, and I wish there was something I could do. But the only thing there is to do is stay. Should I keep reading? This world, I pick up the book, doesn't seem to suck so much.
You say that now, but wait for it.
I look down at the page. An illustrated sea monster staring back at me, and then gaze at Roman. I'll wait for it, if you'll wait for it. He takes my hand and squeezes it.
I'll wait for it.
This is Rebecca Lohman. We hope you have enjoyed this unabridged production of My Heart and Other Black Holes by Jasmine Warga. This program was produced by Dion Audio Services. The director was Ryan Burke. Executive producer, Caitlin Gehring. Text copyright 2015 by Jasmine Warga. Production copyright 2015 by HarperCollins Publishers. All rights reserved. Thank you for listening.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.